accession number 209851.
Frank Scott, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Kennington, Westminster, actually, and lived in Kennington until such time as I was called up into the army.
Which year were you born?
Year? Yes.
1920. Did both your mother and father come from Kennington?
Yeah.
Which school did you go to?
Kennington Lane until I was 11. Then I went to Kennington Road Senior Boys School.
How old were you when you finished your school?
I left school at the age of 14, as most of my generation did.
So this is the mid-30s. What job did you get on leaving school?
Well, hopefully, I was hoping to get into the press. My father was with the press. And apparently it seemed to be a bit of a closed shop at that time, so I didn't quite know what to do. So I was looking through the ads in the various newspapers, and I started off as the company was called Art Display in Neal Street in Kingsway, and I was there for about a week, and I had the job of these large posters they used to put outside cinemas showing all this week. I had the filling in jobs to do and also running errands. And after a week, my father realised it was a bit of a slave trade, so he came over and took me away from that job. I then started with a brewer's chemist at the Elephant and Castle. Although I had no qualifications as such, I was responsible for moisture, ash contents in animal foods. And I did that for a number of years, and then I joined a company called Wright, Lehman and Umney, and I was in the tablet department of that company. There again, with no qualifications, I used to mix all the chemicals together for tablets and pills, and I was with that company when war broke out.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did indeed, yes.
How did you feel about the news?
Not too happy, really. I mean, thinking back to the First World War, my father and uncles never spoke of the First World War. It was something that was so terrible that nobody wanted to talk about it. And the only recollection I have is a photograph of one of my uncles sitting on the mantelpiece, and all I was told that he was in the Royal Horse Artillery in the Somme, and during a shelling raid he went out to put his horses under cover and was killed. That's all we knew of that particular uncle. And it's only recently that one of my younger brothers is on the internet, and he's actually been able to trace my uncle in the Somme, and he's been out there and seen his grave.
Did the war affect you at first in Kennington?
Well, the fact that war broke out on the 3rd of September 39, and I was in the job I was telling you about, it was known as reserved occupation, yes. And I stayed there until I was called up on the 17th of April 1941. So I went through the best part of the London Blitz, and living at Kennington, quite near the Kennington gasworks, seemed a little bit terrifying at the time. And I've actually written about that in my, rather than go through the whole thing, I've written about it in my story there.
I'd be most grateful if you could go through it in detail and put it in your own voice.
Okay. let me see now. Every night, as soon as the sirens went, as soon as it got dark, the sirens would sound and everybody would go aground. And at that time, my brothers and I would be coming home from work. Mother would be preparing a picnic basket that we took down into the Anderson shelter in the garden. And we stayed there until the all clear went next morning. Now, my father, being in the printing trade, used to leave home about midnight, but would come back during the night with the daily papers and to see that we were safe and well. And I can remember on one occasion, I was sitting outside the shelter reading the paper when a bomb hit the gasworks, and I can remember seeing all this aluminium paint come showering down in the glow of the searchlights. Now, being nine in family, I had three younger brothers and two sisters and an elderly grandfather, so that it wasn't possible to lie down at all and relax in the shelter. So we had to sit up all night long. And coming out next morning, hopefully we'd find the house still standing, that water, electricity and gas would still be on. You'd go off to work, hopefully you'd find your place of work still standing. And my workplace was on at Bankside, right across the river from St. Paul's, and the shelter was under tons of coal that serviced the power station in that particular area. So looking back now, I wondered, had a few incendiary bombs actually landed in those piles of coal, then we would have been absolutely barbecued.
What was your exact address at that time?
Kennington, yeah. Number 7 Courtenay Square, Kennington Cross. That is the Duchy of Cornwall estate.
Did bombs fall in Courtenay Square?
The evening or the day that there was a heavy raid on the East End docks, I was in a cinema at the Elephant and Castle. I was on a blind date with a pal of mine and a girlfriend, and the manager came on stage to say there was a heavy raid going on in the dock area. They advised everybody to take shelter, but I was in the back row, and we stayed there until the manager told us that the cinema was going to close down and everybody had to go out. So I spent that night in an air raid shelter in the Elephant and Castle area. You could hear all the bombing going on around. And when we came out, there were firemen's hoses everywhere, fires burning everywhere. And although I would have liked to have got home to see how my family had fared, I felt I had to walk home with the girlfriend, which was in the Shoreditch area, in the opposite direction, unfortunately, to the one I would have wished to take me home quickly. But I did get home eventually. No transport was running, and found that a block of flats just 50 yards from my home had been direct hit by a bomb. But luckily, all the family had gone into the shelter, and they were safe.
Were the flats in your square?
Just on the corner, just on the very corner. But we lost windows, naturally. There was one of these auxiliary water tanks on the square. All the windows were blown out in the square itself.
How do you think public morale stood up to the bombing?
Pretty well, I would say. Pretty well. It was something I feel disappeared after the war. I mean, during the war, people would queue, although there was rationing on, they would queue up daily for fish, meat or whatever. There was no queue jumping. They'd get to the counter to find that the supplies had gone for that day. They would just say cheerio and come back the following day. But I feel the morale was pretty good all round. There were some evenings when we felt it was a little bit boring in the Anderson shelter. We'd go to a shelter nearby. There was a very good shelter under the Imperial Court, which was the NAFI headquarters. But we did feel safe, strangely enough. I mean, the Anderson was about half the size of this room, so you can imagine 9 people in there for several months on end was a little bit...
Any feelings towards the German bomber crews?
Well, I suppose there was at that particular time, naturally, the dreaded sound of the sort of diesel engine, knowing they would be over night after night. I suppose one just got used to the idea eventually. But we were so glad when they started talking about opening a second front and going over there and doing something about it. But at that time, I felt that even the home front was more in the front line than the than we would ever have been overseas.
Were you in the Home Guard?
I was in the local, well, the local defence volunteers, actually. I manned one of these boxes where we sort of sat around just waiting for a call out.
Did you listen to wireless at this time?
Yes, particularly Lord Haw Haw, as most people did. in fact, he became a bit of a music hall joke, I think. I mean, with his... we wondered at the time where he was getting all his information from, naturally. But it's the same with the sight of Hitler. I mean, this is something that comes up at schools, something we've been doing for 12 years now. One of the questions, I mean, we tell the kids, ask a question. Doesn't matter how stupid you think it might sound, ask the question. And of course, one of them is, did we meet Hitler? What was he like, you see? I said, well, I didn't meet him personally, but he did become a bit of a music hall joke. He was rather short. He had this little black toothbrush moustache, a lock of hair that dropped over one eye. His greatcoat seemed to drag around his ankles. He had a peak cap that seemed much too big for him. I said, in fact, as I say, he became a music hall joke. And when I've shown them a picture, before we've spoken about Hitler, I've shown them pictures or stamps. And I said, who do you think this person is? And somebody asked one day, was it Charlie Chaplin? Well, that's when I tell them that he was likened to Charlie Chaplin because he became a music hall joke. But he was the most powerful man in the world at that time.
Did you think at that time the Germans might win the war?
Well, looking back now, the British Army generally, to me, compared with the German war machine, was rather like a dad's army. I mean, when you think of the might of the Germans going into all these countries, occupying them, draining all the reserves from them, all the manpower and so on, I just couldn't see us really beating them at their game.
Any other memories of the period before you went into the army?
Being a Londoner, all I really wanted to do is jump on a bike, put a tent on the back, a couple of billy cans and a can of beans, and go off into the country. So when my call-up papers came, I felt, well, I'm going to see a little bit of the countryside. I had no thoughts of going overseas. I thought, as a soldier, my main job would be just to defend these shores, because there was no mention at that time of going overseas at all.
When did you join up?
17th of April, 1941. It's like your army number is something you never forget.
What was the procedure when you joined up, please?
There was one of the worst bombing raids of London on the 16th of April, 1941. And I was told to report to Waterloo Station. I got as near the station as I could. I noticed there were railway carriages hanging off the bridges in the Westminster area. So that we were taken by coach to Clapham Junction, and from there we caught a train to Blandford in Dorset, and that's where I did my six weeks training, initial training.
You got call-up papers, did you?
Yeah. The strange thing, looking back now, I mean, as I say, I had an elementary education. Realising that my education had been sadly neglected at the age of 14, I went to evening classes for 4 years for four nights a week, which brought me up to the age of 18, just when I thought I'd start enjoying life a little bit. Then, of course, the war came, and that put pay to all that.
What was your training like at Blandford?
Well, it was mainly initial training, gun drills, saluting, marching, all that sort of thing. And I think they possibly gauge you by your education, what qualifications you might have, as to what arm of the service they might put you into. Now, I was posted to a searchlight regiment. It was in London. It was the 32nd Shining 7th, I think it was called. And I did, originally from there, I went up to Scotland for searchlight training. And whilst I was there, I found it pretty boring. And a notice went up calling for airborne divisions. And along with about five of my pals, I volunteered. Now, prior to being interviewed for that, I was posted to a newly formed Heavy ACAC regiment. And also, I did some searchlight work in Hadley in Suffolk. I was in battery headquarters and working on in the plotting room, plotting aircraft around, enemy aircraft on this board, linking up with the local aerodrome and trying to match up with searchlights and fighters in the sky, naturally. Now, going on a little bit from what I said, that I volunteer for airborne divisions, going on much farther, our guns were the only guns with the right sort of range to put down the withdrawal fire for the survivors of the Arnhem drop. And watching these war-torn chaps coming back through, I saw two of my pals that I'd volunteered with in Scotland in 1941 or 42. And you think to yourself, there by the grace of God go I, had I survived, had I not. But I just feeling, knowing how some of those battles turned out with the airborne boys, I'm happy now that I was posted to a newly formed regiment and didn't get into the paratroops.
So what was this Heavy ACAC unit that you went to?
3.7 Heavy. And our role in Normandy was ACAC protection of airfields. Now, when we got into Normandy, there was very little Luftwaffe action, so straight away our role was changed overnight. We were put onto tank busting, airburst, tank busting, and going up through Hell's Highway to Arnhem. I was with the recce group up to, got up through Eindhoven to Nijmegen, and the regiment was cut off at a place called Vagel. And at that time, most of the lads were turned into infantry. So apart from, as I say, ACAC protection of airfield, tank busting, we also had a role as infantrymen for a while. And for that, we got a battle honour, and that is the thing on the wall there. The colonel got the DSO, and we got a battle honour that we were allowed to wear beneath our Second Army sign on our uniforms.
So you were equipped with 3.7-inch guns?
Yeah.
But what was the actual name of the unit?
165 Heavy ACAC Regiment.
Where did you first find this unit in England?
In Bath. Yes, I was posted to Bath, and it's strange how memories come back. I can remember going from Bath Station to where I had to report, rather a large country house, and I can remember walking up the path, just the sound of the gravel under my army boots, and hearing the strains of a piano concerto being played, which it turned out to be the adjutant of the. It was I was posted to heavy regimental headquarters straight away. So there was regimental headquarters, there were three batteries, 198, 275 and 317, the three batteries, plus Remy and all the other odds and ends. And I was with regimental headquarters right through the war.
What kind of duties did you have at regimental headquarters?
My role was known as report centre clerk. So apart from general office duties, typing, one of my jobs, I could do a little shorthand at the time, one of my early morning jobs was to sit in the Padre's tent and listen to the American Forces Network and take down the world news. And I used to type this out, dispatch riders would come in, take this information out to all the batteries, so at least they knew what was going on in other theatres of war. Another role, in the field role, was to go into forward areas in the staff car with the colonel and the adjutant, and this would be to reconnoitre areas for the displacement of the three batteries. Each battery had three troops, so there were 24 3.7 guns between the three batteries. And my role was to say, driven into the forward areas, where the colonel would mark on my map all the areas where the guns would be deployed. I would have to stop in that area and wait for all the guns to come through. The battery commanders would come and check my map, take the information from that. So the whole regiment would go through, and hopefully I would be picked up at some time by a dispatch rider who would take me into the forward areas, and that would carry on with a sort of leapfrogging action. Once the guns were deployed and the Germans were pushed back, it would mean another move, another encounter into the forward areas.
So were the men in this regiment regulars or conscripts?
Oh, no. I suppose some might have been regulars. I'm not too sure at this moment. But I would imagine most would have been called up. I don't remember any hearing of anyone having volunteered.
Any incidents that happened to you or the unit in Bath?
No, it was fairly peaceful. Actually, we moved from Bath to other areas, and we actually we moved into Beckenham and Bromley area of Kent to assemble for moving off to the dock area. So the fact that I lived at Kennington at that time, it was quite easy to, if I wasn't on duty at all, to nip on a train down to Kennington, have a bit of tea with my folks, have a pint at the local, and then get back in time for reveille next morning. I can say it now, that was without a pass.
Were you happy with this unit?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. I enjoyed the job. It was nice being with regiment and headquarters the whole time. Yes, I can't. As I say, I can't think. Unfortunately, a place that should have been taken within a very short space of time was Caen. And I think it was about 3 weeks before we actually got into Caen, and we were camped in an orchard just a few kilometres from Caen, and Jerry started sending over some mortars one evening, and a mortar hit a tree where the officers were playing cards. The second in command was killed, the colonel, I think the medical officer and the lieutenant quartermaster were injured. And that was a very sad occasion. And we buried the second in command. and felt the loss. And several years later, when I was going back to Normandy, I got in touch with the War Graves Commission, and provided you can give them their number, their rank and name, they can tell you exactly which cemetery they are, which plot number, and so on. So I was able to visit the Second Command's grave a few years later.
But can you take me through step by step how you got from Beckenham to Normandy, please?
Yes, we went down to the docks, the London docks, and the weather was very bad that particular evening. We were told we could have some local leave. I would have had the chance to go home once more to say cheerio to the folks, but having gone through all that, I felt I couldn't go through that again. So I didn't go out that particular evening. But there was a very, very heavy downpour of rain. The place was becoming a bit of a quagmire, and I felt this was a foretaste of things to come. And actually, once we got aboard a troop carrier, I think I must have dozed off about that point and awoke as we were sort of hugging the coast, as we were changing course at the Isle of Wight. And that's when I remember joining this huge armada of ships.
What were conditions like aboard ship?
Actually, I think I slept best part of the time. The fact that I might have been awake best part of the night before, thinking of the unexpected. I do remember laying off the coast of Normandy, and a ship very close to us did get a bomb in its hold. And I think we started unloading just before dusk, and something we hadn't covered during the intensive training was climbing down the side of a high-sided ship on a rope ladder with full equipment in a sea with both vessels being tossed around, and if you didn't time it correctly, then you were in dead trouble. You could have dropped between the two vessels or come to a nasty fall, as I say, if you hadn't jumped at the right time. But luckily, having made it, it was an American LCT, and the first thing I remember was the smell of coffee and donuts. This I've actually covered in my little write-up there. When we did finally get aboard the LCT, we found the tide was still in at the beachhead, so we cruised around for a short while until we felt it fairly safe to disembark. And of course, once the ramp comes down, it's every man for himself. But there again, I was travelling in the staff car, and luckily, of course, all the vehicles have been waterproofed, heavy grease over the engines, canvas around the radiator. The exhaust pipes had to be extended because naturally the engine wouldn't fire if the exhaust gases can't be released. So the first thing we did, as soon as we got on land, was to get rid of all this extra junk we were carrying. But I do remember, as we started coming down the ramp, the two officers realised we were still in very deep water. They decided to climb on top of the vehicle, which us poor souls remained in the vehicle. We didn't get our feet wet, but I can remember seeing the seawater coming up, possibly halfway up the windscreen. But
which day did you land?
I think it was about D7. As I say, our role as ACAC Protection of Airfields, we would have landed much sooner, but as soon as it was known that we were going to change our role and become tank busters, they decided that we would sit out there until such time as a safe beachhead had been settled.
Were you part of a division?
Oh dear, now this is when I'm going to start.
Well, don't worry about it, because it'll be on record.
Yeah,
anyway.
Surely.
What happened to you after landing?
Now, say, the first thing we did was to get rid of all this extra junk on the vehicle. Now, this canvas material, I knew we'd have to be living in foxholes for a number of weeks or months even.